Today's show, signing day, who cleaned up, is the Superdome, America's greatest sports venue, and a tax break law in Georgia.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Wimps.
Ross Dellinger.
I'd come out of a crawl space for that stuff too.
And SI's Pat Forty.
This is like trying to move Vince Wilfork when he's lined up over the center.
Here's Pat, Ross, and Dan.
Alright, welcome to the pod, and wouldn't really know it too much, but it's National Signing Day. The official final one.
I literally didn't know it. You're telling me for the first time, Dan.
Until they transfer portal in a week. I mean, guys get to campus now. They're like 4 days.
Yeah. I don't like the winter workouts. I'm out.
So it's just a ledge. No, the alleges are over because verbal commits. They are actually signed. Today's the day. I don't know. Look, most of the kids will stay at least for a year. Better to be good at recruiting than not. I think that's fair to say. Like, this used to be a big deal.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
I miss it being a big deal.
Such a fun day. It was like a midwinter excitement.
The kids don't even remember, Dan. We got to remind the kids listening that this was a big day. They don't even remember the times where everybody would get up like at 5 a.m. and see what's rolling through the fax machine. Yes, the fax machine.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, yeah.
That was outdated even when it was going on. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a big deal. Where is he?
Is that kid? No. I remember vividly one time, like driving to Knoxville, because they were going to sign a good class, and listening to the radio as you're coming into town. It's like, you know, it's 8:05. We got the 4-star receiver from Charlotte. He's in. Still haven't heard from the 5-star defensive end from Miami. Yep. Up in the air. That's good stuff.
Last second flips.
Yeah. It's
very exciting. Well, Texas has been deemed a rivals champ. Looks like the other sites too. Just edging out Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, Oregon. I know it's a stunner. LSU, Florida, Michigan, Auburn, Texas A&M. Is that some order? Seems to be everyone's favorite. Notre Dame, Tennessee. Couple others are obviously doing well. Usual suspects. It does seem that nobody ran away with it, though, like they sometimes did. We did not have, like, when Alabama signed 14 to the top 100 or something. But Texas did really well. They are, according to Rivals, the only team to sign a top 10 prospect from Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, and Texas this year. So they got a really good player from all those states. I don't know if that's just the way it works. But that program's popping. I think they're going to be preseason number one to a lot of people. They got Arch and two Final Fours. Certainly going to be a lot of expectations on Steve Sarkisian. But got to say, he has delivered so far in what the hope was. This is the kind of stuff Texas expects and should expect.
Yeah, totally. I mean, he's come through, and I was one of those that was very much wait and see on that hire at the time. You know, he had been pretty good at Washington, pretty good at USC, and then, you know, self-sabotaged himself out of the USC job and went through the Nick Saban coaching rehab tree, and I thought it was a pretty big, bold step to when they fired Tom Herman and brought in Sark. But Saban was convinced Sark would work, and Saban's usually right, and Chris Del Conte is right so far. So it's good to have Texas back in the mix. It adds an element of spice, having that state have a heavyweight team and an element of team people also like to root against.
Yeah, they're so hated that it does make it fun when it does add another dimension when they're good, because it seems like for the vast majority of people loathe Texas and love rooting against him. when he was hired, I think there's a lot of people that didn't necessarily think that it was the right move, and certainly that it was a risky move given given Sark's pass and everything. But he's built that team too in a way that I think they've really struggled at areas in the past, which are on the line of scrimmage, honestly, and defensively. They've been he's built up the trenches, and we all remember a couple of years ago the first of its kind NIL deal where every offensive lineman got $50,000 in an NIL deal. I think it's a part of building up the trenches.
Oregon signed the most 5 stars per Rivals with 5. Texas got 4 and some others, but that was that. I don't know. I don't know what you make of these groupings, but it was better when it just felt more meaningful. I don't know if it was better, but Texas is humming. They've got money. They've got it's a great place to go to school, the whole thing.
Well, now, the transfer rankings are as important or more important. And then how exactly are those computed? Are they just going back to high school star ratings for people, or are they factoring in production? Because we've talked about this. The class of the year last year was Indiana's, which was made up of dudes from James Madison and Old Dominion and Ohio University. But in terms of instant impact on a program, nobody did better, and nobody was talking about what Indiana brought in at this point. So it's just the equation has changed so drastically, which I think kind of adds to the intrigue of it, because you don't know until you start seeing them in the spring and then into fall camp. And even then, there's guesswork about how good a team's going to be. I remember talking to the Indiana folks, and they're like, yeah, kind of like late August, we thought things were going pretty well. But before then, they weren't even sure.
Yeah, I think the way they do the portal rankings is they do consider, what happened in college, and but you're right, they're more important than even the regular team rankings have been. We always used to look at those, and now to figure out how a program did in recruiting, it seems we drift toward the transfer rankings.
Other notable classes. North Carolina signed 23 kids, so there are 23 guys going to play for Coach Belichick. Not a super high 10th best class in the ACC, so he's got a little work to do. But hey, that's interesting. Colorado only signed 14. Stuck with the Deion mantra of going portal. They did get Julian Lewis and a couple others. 8 of them are 4 stars. So that was pretty interesting. A couple others went kind of low. Texas Tech only signed 18. See some of these classes. I'm looking at like the Big 12. Like some of these late classes are small. Like Kansas only signed 15. You can see where the portal playing a role into all that. Like, do you really want to just grab these guys just to fill out a class?
Yeah. And that's, again, even the high school guys you're signing, you're like, we're keeping them for a year. If we get them for more than that, who knows? The Belichick thing is interesting to me where, I think in theory, at least the presumption there is he's going to coach them up to an elite level, whatever he's got, that he's going to come up with ways to develop guys and or put them in the right schemes. And they're going to be, it doesn't even matter like what their talent rankings were. We'll see if that bears out, but that's one guy that I think you look at and say, well, can he really actually coach a decided schematic advantage, to use the quote from his former assistant, Charlie Weiss.
So, Super Bowl is Sunday, in case you hadn't heard. Game is in the Superdome in New Orleans, where many great events happen. And Jeff Eisenberg, our colleague at Yahoo Sports, did a story declaring the Superdome America's greatest sports venue. Not as revered as other iconic American stadiums, but has hosted more legendary sports moments than any other venue. So that maybe seem controversial. They talked about how when the place was designed, it was set up so that it could host just about anything, including baseball. But he goes a list. There's some pretty great moments. A lot of them are pro football, but there's a lot of college, like Steve Gleason's block punt. That was huge after Katrina. Michael Jordan's shot in North Carolina to win the national championship on that list. That was obviously a huge one. The legendary goal line stand Alabama holds off Penn State 1979. It was only the fifth ever major bowl matchup between college football's 1 and 2. Coach K losing to Duke, losing to North Carolina, ending his career was there. Keith Smart at Indiana hitting the jumper to win the national title in 1987, and then they played for the first time one shining moment after. Nick Saban and LSU win the title in 2004. Syracuse and Carmelo Anthony win a national title there. In basketball, obviously, a lot of good Super Bowl ones. Oh, Louisville and Kentucky playing in the Final Four was in New Orleans. Peter Warwick outduels Michael Vick in 2000. There's a lot of good college ones here. There's others. Muhammad Ali, stuff like that. What are your thoughts there, Pat? Is this the greatest venue of all time in America?
I thought it was an outstanding story. And it was one of those where that was my first thought when I clicked. I was like, no way. Superdome? The only thing the Superdome is best at is the coldest press box in the world, is my thought. But then you start reading, it's like, oh, gosh, all those things did happen here. And I think the combination of having Super Bowls and Sugar Bowls and football national championships and Final Fours, and then you throw in a couple of boxing matches. You got the Roberto Duran No Mas fight, which was actually a terrible fight, but a very memorable moment in boxing. I think he makes a great case. I mean, you don't look at it and say, oh, wow, what a venue. It's not that looking at the Rose Bowl or the LA Memorial Coliseum or something like that, but geez, the amount of stuff there. I think I'd probably still go with the LA Memorial Coliseum, which has hosted Olympics and the first Super Bowl and a lot of other great football moments over the Superdome. But he makes a great point, because especially when you factor in all the basketball. Chris Webber's timeout was there. I went through the list. I think I've been there for like 7 of the things he mentioned, and all of them were extremely memorable. All the Final Fours, it seems like in New Orleans, something crazy happens, or something at least extremely memorable.
Said voodoo, you know?
Yeah.
I grew up going to Superdome, and that was like the thing to do for whatever, monster truck rally or basketball games, or yeah, even baseball games played there. And then obviously Saints games. I had season tickets for the Saints for 10, 15 years. And so grew up in that place, and kind of just seeing it change has been remarkable. We were I was back there, you know, for the Sugar Bowl, and that was the first time I was back. I felt like in a few years, and they had done a lot of renovation there, the new ribbon boards and all that stuff, and it looked pretty incredible. It's crazy how resilient the Superdome is when thinking about what happened with Katrina there 19 years ago, and how the Saints so many times threatened kind of to leave New Orleans because of the Superdome and because of the shape that it was in. They just kept pouring money, and I think we'll continue to pour money into it. It looks really good. How can Jeff leave off the game that changed the playoff and got it expanded, the lovely 2011 BCS championship game between LSU and Alabama, when LSU didn't cross the 50-yard line until like the fourth quarter? And then another one comes to mind. You know, that's the site of – well, first of all, it's the site of all of LSU football's national championships, 03, 07, and 19, and the 19 team, of course, being Joe Burrow and crew, who are likely I think at the time, and maybe still are, statistically the best offense college football has ever seen. So he makes some great arguments in there, and I'm certainly biased, but
so yeah, he did have that one at number 17. I missed it. when I was going through. But yeah, he did have that one at number 17. And that was, you know, Joe Burrow versus Trevor Lawrence in a national title game. This list is good. Go to Yahoo Sports and find it. I mean, Pistol Pete scored 68 in there playing against the Knicks.
Yeah, I don't remember. I remember that happening. I didn't know that was in the Superdome. I was like, oh, yeah.
I mean, the Super Bowl where Desmond Howard had two returns to beat the Patriots when he was with Green Bay. There's just a million things.
Yeah.
Going on in this. LA Memorial Coliseum's got Olympics. That's, but.
Right.
In terms of American sports.
The 1932 and 84 Olympics.
And they're going to have another one.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what, you know, what it'll be used fully for. But yeah, they sold, you know, they make these stadiums different now. This thing was truly the multi-purpose stadium. I just always think it's a great place for a big event because what I was saying this last night, actually, what I think is great about New Orleans is opposed to a lot of the other places. So you go to Miami or LA or whatever. Like, if you come here for a big event, you come to New Orleans, it's you don't have to have a plan. You don't have to have connections. You don't have to have, you don't have to know where to go. You can just come and just be there. And where, you know, you're in Miami, it's like, oh, well, there's this restaurant or this place in South Beach or everything's scattered about. And you kind of have to be like, you can just be the regular guy, show up for a game and walk around the French Quarter and have a great time.
Yeah.
And no, don't even have to spend a lot.
Yeah.
But it's so walkable too. Like it's the best when I always think of course, the just being college football person, like the six New Year's Six bowls and then the championship host site. Like what are, we always compare each of them, and most of them are all spread out and it's really a pain. Like Miami, like Dallas, like Phoenix, but like New Orleans and Atlanta. Right. I think of the Peach Bowl and the Sugar Bowl as having just a connection from the downtown and the city and the community to the stadium right there. And everything is so walkable and easy to get to. It just makes it, it makes it kind of convenient.
Yeah. Yeah. The other two places that are like that, more basketball centric, are Indianapolis and San Antonio, you know, where. As Dan said, it's just very easy. And you don't have to plan, like, oh, we need an Uber over here. And, oh, you're going to need a reservation like 3 weeks in advance. And you know, there's just so many places to go and things to do in New Orleans and different neighborhoods and whatever. It's just, it is a really fun, easy place for these sort of events, no doubt.
And yeah, this week, there's Shad Khan's yacht, huh, Dan?
I saw the yacht. Shad Khan, the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, parked his yacht, $360 million. Yeah, I was down on the Riverwalk, and I was like, what in the world? team's a leaky dinghy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but, you can have a great, it doesn't matter if you're a good owner, you can still be rich enough to own a yacht, a mega yacht.
Yeah, I wonder how long that trip is. You got to go all the way around Florida, right? Up around like the Gulf of Mexico, up the river. Damn.
I would think this thing goes to the Mediterranean and stuff.
Yeah, it probably crosses the ocean. That's true.
It's a big boat, but I still would be a little nervous crossing the ocean in that thing. Yeah, it is a monster. Apparently, there's a basketball court on there, three pools.
Mm-hmm.
Racquetball, I think I saw
pickleball.
Yeah. Pickleball, yeah.
Pickleball court.
Sauna.
It was probably, I would think.
You didn't get on there, Dan? You didn't make the leap across?
No, they let me
on.
They were barely letting me take pictures. Mm. You might dent the boat. No, there's a lot of people taking pictures of that boat. It was amazing. Like you said, the bowl sites, we have our bowl sites and there are some great history and the weather's usually good, but I've always found nothing against Phoenix, but just University of Phoenix Stadium's a really nice stadium, and Phoenix is a great area to be. But like for terms of a big game, it's just like we had the Super Bowl there a couple years ago. You hardly knew.
Yeah,
it's just everything's so spread out, and it's just, and then the guys got to rent a car. Like it just makes it harder. I'd much rather see Indianapolis. I'll stand up for Detroit. Deserves some bigger events. It's got a downtown stadium, easy to walk around. Tons of things to do. Big airport. I know. Can't go to Detroit, but it's like it's easier for a lot of people than Phoenix.
I would put Detroit in the top 10-15 for big sporting events, but I would not put it in the top 3 for weather. Let's just
too
be
cold.
Clear about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Dan, too cold.
Not top too cold. 3 weather.
Remember the championships, CFP tried Indy, and it was 7 degrees. It was 25 degrees inside the tunnels in downtown, which is why the next, whatever, 5 or 6 CFPs are, in Miami, Las Vegas,
Wimps. Wimps.
Not going to have it. Wimps. Boo.
Wimps. I'll just get on my friend Shad Khan's boat and not worry about you people.
Go there up to the Mississippi. You can go all the way up to what?
Minneapolis.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Another good big event city. Yep. Minneapolis, absolutely. They put on a good Final Four up too long ago.
They've been wanting to get a CFP game.
Right.
But after the Indy experience of 7 degrees, I'm not sure that there's a whole lot of desire to go even colder.
What are these people doing? Is there an outdoor requirement?
Yes, yeah. There's a whole outdoor festival. They had to cancel it. Remember, it was sleeting in Indy. I think they canceled it, or they had to rearrange the schedule.
Whatever. They had a Super Bowl in Minneapolis. That was you would have thought. Yeah. The reactions were just hysterical. I don't know how anyone lived.
They leaned into it, didn't they? Have like a media ice fishing excursion.
Everyone in the media went ice fishing to do stories.
Yeah. That sounds great.
How about you hang out at the Mall of America? That's what we did. Yeah. They had
played miniature golf, right?
I did play a lot of miniature golf there. See, you find different things to do. They had the roller coaster, rode the roller coaster, and got to, right? Yeah, I thought it was fine. I like Minneapolis. These people with the has to be this, has to be that. It's all right. You can stuck in traffic in Glendale. It's fine.
That's the thing. Several of these CFP bowls are the stadiums in like another city, literally another city, right? Mm-hmm. Dallas and Miami and definitely Phoenix and LA as well.
Oh, you know what? Before we go to break, we got this song. We got a song to play.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of getting around.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. This fits well. Joe, can you play the song we got here? This is about the Personal Rapid Transit, the PRT, in Morgantown, West Virginia, which we are big fans of because it is the smallest subway system in America, maybe. I don't know. The cars fit like 3 people. It has only a couple stops. I think the Atlanta airport has a more sophisticated operation.
Certainly
Ross wrote it last year. Went there and got a red carpet treatment from West Virginia. But there's a PRT song. The PRT has its own song. Can you play that,
Joe? Ballad of the PRT.
Down in West Virginia, in a place called Morgantown, right of the future will help you get around. Step up and pay your money, just wait and step inside. Sit down on the fiberglass bench and just enjoy the ride. Personal Rapid Transit runs all over town. It'll get you where you're going if the damn thing ain't broke down. The population doubled and the students came in fall. You had to get to Evansdale and the traffic it would crawl. 1975, old Boeing came to town. Robert Byrd and Nixon's that lay that concrete down. 5 personal rapid transit runs all over town. It'll get you where you're going if the damn thing ain't broke down.
All right. I think that's enough. It's a banger. It's a banger.
Very touching ballad.
It really is. I mean, Nixon, Byrd coming together. creating this three stop. How many stops are there? Five?
Oh, man.
I don't think it's five. I think it's fewer than five.
No, somewhere around there, I feel like. I don't remember. I took all those notes, and I don't know what I did with them. I don't know.
Good talk.
Didn't say.
I don't
know. But it doesn't break down that often. The song says when it's not broken down. I think he was just trying to find words that rhyme. Remember,
snarky.
I feel like when they told me, one of the things they told me is that it actually doesn't break down very often at all. Like through the years, they've had very, very few. So it's a very efficient system, Dan. And I hope I can return to Morgantown in the spring, summer, maybe even the fall, and give a little ride on a game day would be ideal. Maybe with a beverage or two.
Yes, we love the PRT, the ballot. It was a little snarky. All right, we'll be back after this. All right, Pat, you've been doing some admirable work on this point shaving situation we got going here. College basketball is mainly in the NBA, but we have been seeping into mid and low major college basketball. People are trying to allegedly influence the games for gambling purposes. What do you got?
Yeah, it's a wild story. I think we're still kind of scratching the surface on it, but this has been simmering under the surface of this entire season, college basketball. People have been hearing about it. A lot of rumor, innuendo, speculation. And now we're finally starting to see some reports from Wall Street Journal, ESPN, Sports Illustrated of who's involved. And it goes back, Dan, to started last March, Temple. Had a game that was clearly being manipulated where the first half line went crazy against UAB. They went from UAB favored by like 2.5 to 8, which is unheard of, which is clearly was being tracked. And so that game flagged things, and there was a Temple player who was, after the season, tried to transfer to Virginia Tech, was kicked out of Virginia Tech, and has not played since, and probably will not play college basketball again. Hizier Fab Miller. And that kind of opened up the lid on this. And then we have the Jontay Porter situation. And these are connected. So we have the NBA guys. We had Jontay Porter, obviously, who's been banned for life by the NBA. And then we have now had Terry Rozier come out for a game in 2023, in which he only played a quarter, played less than 10 minutes, took himself out with a foot injury, did not hit his over-under prop bets, and didn't play again that season. There's speculation that at least one more NBA player could be implicated, and there's speculation that at least 7 schools could be implicated. The ones we know so far, Temple, Loyola Maryland had a player, North Carolina A&T, Eastern Michigan had 2 games that got flagged. And then ESPN reported Mississippi Valley State. So we are dealing largely, Temple's a name to a degree, but we are dealing largely with mid and even low major, and really like the lowest major with some of these. And it's kind of, I mean, I think it hints at the predatory nature of this scheme. Again, not all of which has come to light, but that you're trying to get players from the poorest schools and have the least amount of NIL opportunities and say, hey, we kind of need you to manipulate the first half here. And the feds are on it. The NCAA is on it. When all's said and done, I think it's going to be a pretty wild story.
So it's sad because, like Pat said, it seems like, you know, the adults are exploiting and using the kids here to make money, which isn't the first time, of course. I remember when, you know, was 2 years ago when Charlie Baker came in to the NCAA, that was like his chief concern was, and he expressed it quite a bit, that that sports gambling was a really good big concern, and prop betting was a big concern, which is why the NCAA, I think, is going around, right, Pat, and like tried to get prop betting to be prohibited under state laws. And I think they've had success maybe with a few states banning prop betting because it leads into things like this potentially. So it's all very concerning.
It amazes me they can get NBA guys in on this.
It's just stunning.
You'd think they'd be on top. I mean, I agree. Like, guy doesn't have any money. Someone gives him some money. Do this. Who cares? No one's even paying attention to this game. Totally get that. The NBA guys have money.
Yeah.
Don't do this. Don't do this. They're going to get you because someone's going to bet. It doesn't take a whole lot to trigger all their algorithms and stuff.
Yeah.
Mississippi Valley game. Like, how much money's getting? Yeah. It was like that. Remember the Alabama baseball?
The baseball, right. LSU and Alabama baseball game. Yeah.
Guy bets a ton of money in Cincinnati.
What did he try to bet? Like $500,000? It was some absurd number, $100,000 or something like that?
It was a lot. And, well, he also told him, I know a guy on the coaching. I think he told them.
Yeah. Well, he showed him the text message exchange with the coach.
Like, that's the dumbest gambler of all time.
Yeah.
We had a field day with him. These people are not too far behind. I don't know if they're dumb, but they're extremely reckless. Because you said, I mean, one of the reasons I get the amount of angst that people hear about this and like, well, this is what happens when you get legalized gambling. But also what happens when you legalize gambling is you can track it. And that's why these things are getting caught, is you have really sophisticated ways to find out who's betting how much and where and when. And it's, you know, and they can find these people. And so, you know, you've got a pretty good regulatory system, maybe not perfect by any means. But yes, when all of a sudden there's money, large sums being laid down on North Carolina A&T or Eastern Michigan game, ding, 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 ding. And that's, it's, you know, it's amazing how dumb you have to be to try this or reckless. Now, there's a lot of talk that this all originated offshore, which was harder to track. And then they got greedy or whatever, they came onshore. And that's when things started falling apart for them. The guys involved in this, whoo, there's some characters. The people that have been arrested in connection with Jontay Porter, who are also believed to be, you know, connected to the rest of this. I mean, if you Google a guy named Shane Hennon, from Philly/Las Vegas, who was arrested in the Las Vegas airport with a one-way ticket to Colombia and like thousands of dollars of cash and a bunch of cell phones. Very normal, very nothing suspicious there. But you Google him, like poker.org, like just puts in the headlines, notorious card cheat arrested. Wow. Yeah. And this other guy, Bruce Pham, also, he was arrested at JFK airport, one-way ticket to Australia. Same MO. Card cheat. I mean, they're just flat out calling them this stuff. So this originates with these poker players who were alleged cheaters. And then they tried to cross over by whatever means into fixing games. These are not good characters. You don't want your college players necessarily somehow involved with them.
Hope the flight was refundable. You ain't getting on, ain't going.
Well, that...
Hope they get trip credit.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to draw a little less attention to yourself, go ahead and buy the round trip ticket as opposed to the one way, you know?
I do look at this. I know everyone thinks it's happening all the time. Maybe it is, but I do look at these and say, yeah, it's probably a good sign that some pop up every once in a while.
Yeah. That people are paying attention.
Yeah.
You know? It's just it's harder to fix games, I think, and do it undetected.
Speaking of government and regulation, we have a Senate bill in the state of Georgia. Georgia Senate Bill 71, will change the Georgia code relating to income tax so as to exempt from taxable net income compensation of athletes for the use of the athlete's name, image, or likeness. It goes on a little more here. I'm reading the actual bill. That's pretty much it. Sponsored by, they got a few guys in here. Senator Kirby Smart. Five guys. So this got some attention because obviously there's no income tax in Florida. And there's a lot of Texas. And so Georgia's kind of recruiting against those guys. So this would give them the advantage of, if you sign with us, you don't have to pay income tax on your NIL, which would, I guess would be either real NIL, as they like to call it, or any NIL. This is wild. Of all the people to get a tax break, athletes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just so problem. The Bulldogs might be able to, like, come on. Mm-hmm. Go Dogs. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people actually doing work in the state of Georgia, working. They don't get a tax-free income, but you do if you're an athlete.
Cruton, Dan. Cruton. Always be Cruton. There was a good post. I'm trying to find it by somebody about that. Here it is. I'm going to read it. This is actually, it was from Matt Stinchcomb of ESPN and the SEC Network, 680 The Fan, a former player himself. And he said, as a resident of Georgia, I think this is a great idea. Would definitely help in recruiting and retaining talent. I'm eager to hear the subsequent announcements for educators, nurses, firefighters, police officers. Seems like the exemption would have this effect for all earners. Yeah, we'll see. Also, Tennessee doesn't have a state income tax. Oh, yeah. So all of Georgia's basically fiercest rivals. You can see what's happening here. This seems too crazy to pass, right? But I don't know. I mean, they've passed crazier things, probably, especially in this kind of era that we're in. But this is this kind of goes, Dan, to like the heart of the issue with a lot of this NIL and athlete compensation stuff, which is state lawmakers and the involvement of state lawmakers trying to give their schools an advantage in thus doing that, starting trends and such, and then in getting off balance, I think, the rules the rules in general, the NCAA rules in general, and how they're applied, because each state has a different state law, and one state's trying to catch up with the other. We saw it in NIL, right, and now we're seeing it kind of in the revenue share era as well. And now here's the kind of the next thing, because if Georgia proposes it, you can bet, you know, Mississippi and Arkansas and some other states in that footprint will probably be on the way to drafting something themselves.
Yeah, nothing better than the fanboy legislators that are trying to come up with something completely stupid, like the guy in Ohio wanted to make it a felony to plant a flag after the Michigan-Ohio State
game. Think of the children, Pat. Think of the children.
Yes, yes, for common decency. And now, this is all-time stupid, frankly. Good for Stinchcomb, who is a Georgia Bulldog, pointing that the lunacy of this. So good luck with it. But yeah, this is why you get Sankey and Charlie Baker and other people saying we don't want a patchwork of uneven state laws. We want uniform legislation because of this sort of
change
thing.
Change the tax code? What? It ain't fair, Paul. These taxes. I mean, how will little old Georgia survive? Their athletes have to pay taxes. Like,
yeah, they're at such a terrible disadvantage. It's been hurting them a lot.
Amazing the economy of Georgia even operates at all. Why would anyone live there and do business there? They can do this for pro. They can do it for the pros, help the Falcons and the Hawks and stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, look, there's a lot of kids working at school. A lot of kids. Yeah. Most kids go to college. They got to hold down a job too. Try to pay the extensive costs. I don't think that the ones who deserve the tax break, A, would be anyone, but B, Carson Beck and his Lamborghini, whatever he had. Right. It's the dumbest. I know how big this is. I know how big college football is, obviously. But really, like, are the actual people in the state be like, oh, I'm good with that? Yeah. Like, hell no.
No. I would like to know, how is this introduced? Does this lawmaker have to stand up in some committee or in the Georgia State House and declare it? I mean, or do you just put it in writing? Because I would love to just hear the verbal response of like, are you serious with this? What are you doing?
No comments on the bill right now. Senator Brandon Beach, Senator Greg Dolezal, Senator Ben Watson, Senator Cardin Summers, and Senator Frank Ginn are sponsors, according to this website I'm looking at. So,
okay,
good luck. I don't know. We're not. It's obviously got a long way to go. I cannot imagine a carve out for the poor athletes.
Pat mentioned uniform state laws and stuff like that. You know, in this new revenue sharing kind of world, the SEC really wanted to, and Greg Sankey's been public about this, they really wanted to uniform their 12 states, wanted to get a uniform state law in each of the 12 states so that they could legislate some things from the conference level and enforce rules from the conference level. However, recently that's hit a snag, as I think some of the states don't want to do that, right? Because they have an advantage, Texas, Tennessee, you know, maybe Florida, that they have the advantage right now in NIL and all that stuff. Their schools have the advantage. So they don't want to do a uniform state law. They don't want to be enforced in any way. And so that's been a struggle to get that done. It seems like that may not be something possible. But I was just reminding of that with all the uniform state law talk. And Dan, you know, this week, actually, since we're talking about this, up here in D.C., it's been a pretty busy week. A lot of folks back on the Hill, Dan, doing some lobbying for a congressional bill. It's been a busy few days. Not only some ADs and commissioners and general counsels and all that, and NCA folks, but the collective association with the collective directors of the booster collectives at several schools, as many as I think 20 were in person here, and they were they're lobbying basically the opposite of what the NCAA and college administrators are lobbying. They are lobbying against any kind of bill that would give protection or codify the settlement, the House settlement, and give protection to the NCAA in any way. So it's been an interesting few days, and it'll continue for several weeks, if not months, to as Ted Cruz kind of finalizes and dots some I's and crosses T's on draft legislation that I would expect to be introduced later this spring.
Yeah. Dueling lobbyists.
Yeah. It's a real snapshot of college sports that an athletic director or a commissioner can exit a meeting with a senator where he is lobbying to have protection and have a bill. And when he exits, the collective director of his own school maybe comes into the office to lobby the opposite. That's kind of a snapshot of college athletics.
Yeah. There you go. That's where we're at. All right. We'll be back after this. All right. We're just going to go right to the old People's Court here. And this is from the New York Times. You guys mock my where I get these stories. The New York Times. Obviously, we had the tragic fires out in Southern California. And this was took place in Altadena, California, where a 500-pound bear, 525-pound bear, got in the crawl space underneath a guy's house, obviously to save himself. And he did. The problem is he wouldn't come out. And not real sure how the heck do you get a 525-pound bear to get out of your crawl space. So they're trying to figure out how to get this bear out of there. Fish and wildlife officials, all this different stuff. They could tranquilize them, but they had no way to haul the 525-pound bear out. They set a trap. The way they got him out, because they didn't really because of all the different stuff, was the rotisserie chicken down at the grocery store. They put rotisserie chicken, sardines with tomato sauce, and peanut butter smeared apples and the bear came right out. So they got him, Pat. You shared me with this one. Actually, I didn't read the New York Times.
I'd come out of a crawl space for that stuff, too.
I mean, a good rotisserie chicken.
Apples with peanut butter? I mean, you're speaking my, that's like my snack. So there you go. Like two of my favorite things.
Yeah, pretty ingenious work here because, yes, you do not want like a totally drugged out 525-pound bear that you're trying to push out of a small space. That ain't going to work. This is like trying to move Vince Wilfork when he's lined up over the center. It's not easy to do. So, they put the chickens to work there and sardines. I wonder, do you look up on the internet like popular bear treats or what? How do you come up with sardines? I wonder. Chicken would just make sense. Yeah, let's go throw a little roasted chicken out there. But I don't know how they came up with the rest of the menu, or if you just go on a shopping spree down at the grocery store, like this, and this. Hopefully it works. But anyway, they got the bear. He's not big enough for Fat Bear Week. He's only 525 pounds. You got to be like 1,000 to matter up there at the Katmai Peninsula. But still, a large animal. Good work getting him out of there.
I mean, there's really nothing a rotisserie chicken can't do.
True.
Yeah. I mean, you're just winning when you got rotisserie chicken.
A nice hot one, Dan, is just like just out of the oven. Perfect. They put it in that plastic and it kind of steams up and it stays nice and moist. It's all juicy, you know, juices are running over. Love a good rotisserie chicken.
Yeah, pretty affordable. Yeah. Chicken and the
eggs. Cheaper than
eggs
these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see if they're still affordable.
The whole chicken is cheaper than a dozen eggs these days. Chicken or the egg, huh?
You're going to go to like a steakhouse or have a three-egg omelet. So it works these days.
Anyway, Waffle House, upcharges, huh? You see that?
Had a little rotisserie chicken last night here. Shredded up on a Caesar salad. Mm.
Oh, well, good job. All right.
40 hustle.
I did see Waffle Houses have the upcharge if you want an egg. Mm.
50% an egg. Yeah, or 50 cents an egg. Yeah.
Wow.
Tough out there for the breakfast industry, man.
Jim Boeheim announced last night while he was calling a triple overtime Clemson Georgia Tech game that he was going to go straight to the airport, but maybe stop at Waffle House first.
WH, man.
How is Boeheim as a broadcaster?
He's exactly what you would expect. He's kind of mumbly and whiny, but he's, you know, what he says is actually good.
Yeah.
And
insightful, but
right. Not afraid to call people out like this. The same player kept taking bad shots at the end of regulation or the end of OT and second OT. He called him on and called it before he did it, too. He said, drive. Do not shoot the pull-up three. Drive. And then he'd shoot the pull-up three. And then he would say, why? Why? This is good.
So you want out of Boeheim.
Similar things he probably said on the bench.
Oh, yeah.
Watching
players. Probably just sitting there just talking. Yeah. We have sad news with Joe, our producer, Joe De Leon. This is his last show with us. Moving on to bigger and better things, which he can describe to you where we can find you. But, Joe, we're going to miss you. You're a tremendous, tremendous asset to the show, a great voice on the show. And I think a lot of our listeners who like listening to you would like to follow you. Where are you going to be? Where can we find you as you move on and upwards from, this operation?
Well, I
congrats on getting out.
Yeah.
So drag your career down. You're a young man. You don't need to be tainted by, scarred by dealing with us.
Well, in all seriousness, though, I being able to work with you guys only elevated me more, and you know, just getting to see how you guys operated and being a part of it.
I know that's what you mean?
I know that's it sounded more negative than it was.
How not, Dan, he learned how not to do things from us.
Just behind the scenes, the show was delayed today by an hour because of this computer was rebooting.
Camera issue, computer rebooting.
Unintentionally ended up sounding like a shot.
No, Wetzel has no microphone stand. He
lost
power for a second. How not to operate.
Today has been a complete show, frankly. But
what I obviously meant by that, though, outside of the very hilarious weekly dysfunction, there was obviously a ton of amazing professionalism in how you guys have operated with yourselves as journalists and as hosts. And I'd like to think that a good amount of that bled on over to me, and it helped influence me and help me in the less than a year that I was working with you guys. But I'm going to be joining A to Z Sports and doing hosting for their NFL draft and college football coverage. So it's surreal. It feels weird because I spent 4 years as a producer and now I'm jumping to this. But couldn't be more grateful that I got to work with you guys and get to know you guys this well.
Congratulations.
You're now one of the talent from backstage to onstage.
Now you become a maintenance pain in the ass like us. But no, you're fantastic. Great work. The couple of times that you've jumped in, and especially in Race for the Case, I think you were astute enough that everybody's like, why are the other guys even on there? Put Joe on and take Pat and Ross off. Mm-hmm. But you'll kill it. And looking forward to watching your career.
Yeah, you're going to do great. So A to Z Sports Draft.
We'll be sad you are gone.
We are sad. So
I'll keep texting you guys stupid stories I find on Twitter.
Thank you.
Please do.
We do need those, obviously, if you listen to the show. It was a little disorganized. All right. Well, that's good. Well, we'll be back after the Super Bowl with next week. No Joe, but we'll soldier on. Try to carry on for you. Appreciate everyone listening. We will talk to you later.